This weekend starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
In search of the Goldilocks economy, I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
Is there a chance of a soft landing from skyrocketing inflation? An economist believes there is. Hear his reasoning.
Two things being added by employers these days: salary ranges to job descriptions and offers to pay abortion travel expenses.
On the tech front, can Google's artificial intelligence really have feelings?
And fed up with delays and cancellations, some business flyers are opting to drive.
They planned a trip to the Caribbean. There were 150 people flying in from all over the world for this corporate meeting, and 15% of the people were affected by canceled and delayed flights.
Allison Poley at the Wall Street Journal on the long workaround by business travelers. Well, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell now recognizes accomplishing a soft landing will be difficult, but a lot will depend on Americans' tolerance for inflation above 2%. So is there still a chance at a soft landing for the economy? In-depth analysis from Peter Morici, Professor Emeritus of Business at the University of Maryland, writing in The Washington Times. Peter, how do you see things here?
Well, even with higher interest rates in real terms adjusted for inflation, money's still cheap. And sooner or later, people are going to recognize that inflation is going to be around a while. And paying 6 or 7% on your mortgage is not a lot if you're going to expect to get, you know, say 5% annual pay increases or whatever. So my feeling is that housing prices will hold up. And once people see that, I think that they will sort of just adjust to a higher inflation environment. I do think inflation will slow down. Markets tend to. The feeling is that we're headed for a period where growth might not be great, but that people learn to accommodate themselves to inflation as they did in the 80s after Paul Volcker toughened up. People forget that he had 4% inflation after he pulled things down.
When you say the bottom won't fall from home prices, what's the reasoning there?
Well, during the pandemic, we didn't buy many homes. The demand remains very strong, and rents are rising very rapidly. As a consequence, you know, folks see those rising rents, and, you know, sellers aren't going to sell out unless they keep their prices. This is not like we did coming out of the financial crisis. You know, people aren't over-leveraged and things like that.
We're speaking with Peter Morici, Emeritus Business Professor at the University of Maryland, also an economist, and he's written a piece for the Washington Times. It's called Soft Landing for the Economy, Still Possible. This 2% inflation rate that the Fed has, still the proper number?
I don't think they can hit it. The reason being is if you look at, you know, food, energy, and so forth, you know, those areas where they have very little control because of external events, it's about half the CPI. My feeling is that you look at food, energy, and automobiles because of electrification, and they're kind of out of options. So they would have to take the rest of the CPI down to zero to get to 2%, and that's not in the cards.
Okay, so what's an acceptable number then?
I don't mean this to be acceptable. I'm just saying this is the reality.
Okay.
They're going to have a lot of trouble getting down below 4. So at some point, they're going to say, well, this is about as good as we can do. They take the foot off the brake and the economy continues growing again. Now, the question is, how soon do they do that? And I think politics enters this a lot, because I have to believe that Mr. Powell remembers Mr. Trump with great fondness, and as a consequence, does not want to do much to enable his election again. I think in the end, the Washington establishment will rally around Joe Biden, not because they love him, but simply because he's the lesser of two evils.
Is inflation peaking right now or declining? What's your sense?
I don't think it's peaking. I think it sort of hit a plateau for a while. They're going to be bouncing around in this 8% range for a little while, and then it will start to taper off, especially in the winter and in the spring.
All right, so touch on that then. Looking ahead to 2023, Where are we going to be 6 months, either in the
last quarter of this year or the first quarter of next year, we're going to have negative growth. The momentum in the economy is tapering off. Unemployment's going to go up a bit. But it's not going to be, 8, 9, 10% unemployment. It's going to be more like 4 or 5. And then the economy will start to take off again. But it won't be dramatic. I think we're looking at 4 or 5% inflation, 2% growth. We are looking at stagflation. We really can't solve these problems unless we solve the problems in the Ukraine, because there's too much Russian oil that's off the market, essentially. And we couldn't make up for it if we drilled more, though we should, but Biden won't let us. And there's too much Russian and Ukrainian grain that's off the market. So until we resolve the war in the Ukraine, we're not going to solve this inflation problem.
Thanks, Peter. Peter Morici, Professor Emeritus of Business at the University of Maryland, writing an opinion piece for The Washington Times. Coming up next, new trends at the workplace. Dell's Black Friday in July sale is here. Power productivity with a tech refresh, now with up to 45% off top-rated laptops like the XPS, along with our special deals on business desktops with Intel Core processors. Get big savings on the latest servers, storage, monitors, and more with free shipping and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Upgrade today by calling 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for spending part of your holiday weekend with us. Two things we're hearing a lot about on the job scene right now: more generous pay in many fields, and companies covering travel expenses for employees seeking abortions. Insight from Julie Bauke, career strategist and founder of the Bauke Group. Julie, take us through this.
I love this. Yeah, it's I think it's going to save a lot of time and effort and hand-wringing and pearl-clutching, on both sides of the desk. Yes, I think it's a great move.
And will it be for everybody, I guess?
Well, we'll see. Right now, LinkedIn, which is quickly becoming the source of all job postings or most job postings, about 25% to 30% of the jobs listed on LinkedIn come with some sort of a salary range. And that's the key. It's not going to say this job pays $50,000 a year. It will always be a range, which allows for factoring in things like, how many years you've been doing this, what your education is, what your accomplishments are, et cetera. So it still gives employers a range to work within, but it also gives candidates a way to screen themselves in or screen themselves out right up front.
Yeah. Okay. So if you are a potential employee at a firm, how do you negotiate to get yourself to the higher end of that pay range?
So one of the things that you should always do anytime you are applying for a job, you look at what they're looking for, research the company, and figure out, based on your experience and what you would bring on day one, where are you? How much experience do you have based on what they're looking for? For instance, if the job says 5 to 7 years experience and you've got, on the upper end, 7, 8, 9 years experience, and it's in a relevant industry, then in that case, I think you'd be very safe negotiating to the higher part of the range. But if you've just a few years experience and this is a stretch goal for you or a stretch role for you, I don't think it's realistic to expect you're going to start at the top end of the range. I think you've got to look at, you're probably going to be closer to the bottom end of their range, and then you have the opportunity to work your way up.
We're speaking with Julie Bauke, career strategist, also founder of the Bauke Group, and we're talking about trends at work. Another one that's gained a lot of popularity, at least in conversation the past few days, is this trend of employers paying for abortion travel.
Yeah, this is going to play out. There's so many tentacles to it. But in essence, what they're saying is, look, most of these large companies who have come out and said they're going to cover travel already cover the abortion itself. They consider it a healthcare service. That's where these larger companies have come down on this. What they're now saying is they're loosening up like healthcare reimbursement accounts, which are pre-tax savings accounts that most big companies offer that people put their money into pre-tax. They're saying, we're going to allow you to use money in that account if you have it. And some companies are going so far as to say, we will actually cover, if you live in a state in which abortion is illegal, we will cover your travel to a state where you can get it done. And when you think about why they're doing this, the 59% of people are opposed to the Roe v. Wade being overturned. I am positive that if you just polled millennials and Gen Z, that number would be way higher.
Can get dicey, I suppose, for some of these companies, because if you are in a red state which has strict abortion laws, I mean, we haven't seen yet, I guess, what could happen if you are an employee who chooses to go across state lines for an abortion and your company helps pay for, say, the travel.
Yeah. So there's a few things, and there's a lot of talk right now about we're going to go after these people and after these states. When you start thinking about how that would play out, first of all, we've got privacy laws. We've got HIPAA, you know, which, as you know, anytime you go to the doctor, you know, they are very strict about who they'll even tell, you know, your dental results to. So imagine you've got individual privacy laws, doctors, organizations. I mean, exposing people's health care services is just not going to happen. You know, we have way too many privacy laws for that. So imagine you're the state of Texas and you're going after, you know, old 25-year-old Jane Doe for crossing state lines to get an abortion. That's just not going to play well. I think it's so hairy, but it comes down to very simply, we already have laws in place to protect people's privacy. You know, my employer or the state of whatever state I live in isn't allowed to know that I have cancer, let alone that I did all these other things. And if you treat it as a healthcare service, it's going to fall under that same umbrella of privacy.
That's Julie Bauke, career strategist at the Bauke Group. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. As the nation's travel system strains under staffing shortages, cancellations, and COVID absences, some frustrated professionals are opting to drive instead of fly for work trips. More from this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
This summer's air travel disruptions are leading some business travelers to change plans and hit the road. More from Allison Poley of the Wall Street Journal. Allison, what are meeting and conference organizers doing to deal with some last-minute changes?
They are accounting for cancellation and delays when it comes to people who are traveling by air. So some companies are allowing travelers to drive 5 to 7 hours for business meetings, whereas before they might have suggested flying. And conference organizers are making sure that keynote speakers aren't presenting on the first day to account for delays. Instead, they're moving those important sessions to day 2 or 3.
Allison, who did you talk to for your story, and what are some examples of what's been happening?
I talked to business travelers as well as corporate event planners. And so in one instance, I was speaking to the CEO of Paragon Events, which is a corporate event company based in Florida. And they mentioned that they planned a trip to the Caribbean. There were 150 people flying in from all over the world for this corporate meeting. And 15% of the people were affected by canceled and delayed flights, which meant that the company had to scramble to find last-minute hotels, to rebook the flights, and people were missing the event they had traveled for. So the staff were on the phone past 2 a.m. to make sure people weren't stranded. I also talked to a business traveler who missed the beginning of a conference in San Diego earlier this month. So she was supposed to fly to Vancouver and then on to San Diego, but one of her flights was canceled and she had problems booking a new one. So she ended up flying to Los Angeles, driving the rest of the way in a car, and then had a canceled flight on the way back. So the entire trip was a bit difficult.
We're speaking with Allison Poley of the Wall Street Journal. Allison, is it now the feeling that if a trip is going to be 6 or 7 hours in a car, you might as well take the car?
For some travelers, yes, especially when you factor in the time of getting to the airport, waiting for your flight, potentially encountering a delay, and then getting to your destination. Some people are saying it's just easier to have that certainty and control and drive to their destination.
If there's no choice, you've got a very far way to go, or you're going over water or something like that, what are some tips on how you can maybe avoid some of the travel delays in the air?
Book a nonstop flight as opposed to having a connection. Early morning flights typically have a much better rate of success than flights later in the day, which can get backed up from delays. And you might also considering traveling the day before an important meeting or even a couple days before, just to make sure that you get there in time.
This all adds up to higher costs, I'm sure, for the companies.
Absolutely. So booking nonstop flights is more expensive, as is traveling the day before with an extra hotel stay. But for some companies, it's worth it, because if they are investing the time in planning these trips and sending their employees along, then they want to make sure that they actually happen.
Allison, your story also touches on the high cost of hotels. There are also some inconveniences there. Talk about that.
Hotels are more filled. They have higher occupancies than they did in the past. So if you do get delayed or canceled, it can be tough to find a last-minute room. The prices are also higher, which, as we had talked about before, affects the bottom line for companies. For event planners who are booking meetings at hotels, they're finding that they're working with employees who are stretched thin and short-staffed because of staffing shortages and those types of issues. For example, a director of sales is carrying out the entire planning process as opposed to handing it off to organizing staff. So it can take longer for these events to come together.
With all these problems now associated with travel, some companies deciding to just go back to this lousy virtual format that we've been dealing with for the last 3 years?
People are really eager to get back in front of their clients and employees, but they are still planning for virtual and hybrid options.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka with Wall Street Journal travel reporter Allison Poley. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect, the taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka, first weekend of July. Coming up this half hour, does Google's AI really have feelings? Also, the trend of hyper-casual video games, plus spending on July 4th, and better voice options for your Waze app. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, one of the big tech news developments recently was that a leading AI researcher named Blake Lemoine had been suspended after going public that he believed that one of Google's more advanced AIs had attained sentience, the capability of sensation or feeling. Most experts agree that it hadn't, but that would likely be true regardless of whether it had, because we tend to connect sentience to being human, and AIs obviously are anything but. But as tech analyst Rob Enderle says, what the world considers sentience is changing. Rob, explain.
If you can't tell the difference between a sentient AI and one that isn't, does it really matter? It's not sentient. Because it's going to affect your behavior and how you interact with it much the same way. And much like some people that lack empathy, you might consider not to be human. The psychopaths, for instance, or sociopaths might be considered non-humans in human form. AIs can present and have been able to present themselves as human for a while now. Watson, in a broad trial, insurance trial, actually had men asking it out on dates, and the AI capability that Blake Lemoine, who's the guy that was put on leave after calling Google's advanced AI sentient, that AI is arguably more capable than the implementation of Watson, which was several years ago, that I'm talking about. So from his perspective, he's having ongoing intelligent conversations with a computer that appears to recognize its existence and can pass the Turing test, which was the fundamental test of sentience. And this means we've kind of crossed into that very weird area where we may not be able to tell whether the person on the other end of the phone or even on the other end of the video call is a computer or a real person. And we need to be, you know, cautioned to both understand that and likely moderate our behavior, anticipating the arrival of truly sentient computers and computers that may have a certain amount of independence and may object to our continued abuse of computing hardware and computing interfaces, much like we abuse other humans.
We're speaking with Rob Enderle, founder and principal analyst at the Enderle Group. He's written a piece for TechNewsWorld.com called The Birth of Google's Sentient AI and the Problem It Represents. So part of this is that, as you point out in your piece, we don't have a good definition of sentient. Are we going to, at some point, is it always going to be loosely defined?
Here's another problem. I mean, we've determined these parts of the world have been determined, for instance, an octopus is sentient. But the nature of the octopus's sentience is very different than our own.
Yeah.
It can use tools. It appears to be able to memorize and form relationships, and it can communicate. Apparently, even with humans, as recent tests have shown. But the way it approaches intelligence is a bit different than our own, which took us a long while to determine whether it's sentient. And we're not, as a world, in agreement that it is even sentient, even though it's biological. It's very possible that a computer could reach a level of sentience that we just simply could not determine. In other words, that's true of a lot of things. We're starting to argue that certain plants may be sentient, just that their ability to process information is so much slower than our own, that our ability to communicate with those plants may be very difficult, if not relatively impossible. But given the breadth that sentience could encompass, and our inability to even determine sentience in a very narrow field, the possibility that we'll be able to identify sentience in the future isn't getting much better over time. We're discovering a much broader range of sentience than we originally thought possible, and we don't have tools to determine if we're sentient or not that are reliable, let alone a mechanical a creation that approaches knowledge and information in a much different way than we do.
That's tech analyst Rob Enderle, founder and principal analyst of the Enderle Group. The newest in video games, as simple and easy as it gets. The hot mobile genre is distinguished by ultra-simple gameplay, repetitive and low-stakes challenges, oftentimes rudimentary graphics, and a business model that relies heavily on advertising. It's a story by Katie Dayton, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Katie, what are hyper-casual games?
Hyper-casual games, I think the best way to explain them is, do you remember Flappy Bird? That app that took over everyone's lives for like a hot second, way back when. These are super, super simple games to play, like Candy Crush, in comparison, is pretty sophisticated. The idea is you should be able to learn exactly what the gameplay is, how to play within a matter of seconds when you load them up. And they're very low stakes. You're not really, most of the time, you're not really competing with anybody or for anything. Probably your kid could play them.
So why this trend? Why the trend toward hyper-casual when it seems every day we get closer and closer to these things being reality?
That was a good question, and one I wanted to find out because I, you know, came across this term when I was writing a different story a few months ago, and I downloaded one of these games just to check it out, just to see what, you know, these my sources were talking about, and I got completely addicted to it. And it was this game called High Heels, and you have a model that just walks down a catwalk, and you just have to, you know, collect heels. She grows taller and taller, and you jump over obstacles. That's literally all it is. And I couldn't understand why I was so addicted to it. There is something about the visuals, which are normally very brightly colored, the haptics, the vibrations that your phone makes whenever you, you know, collect a prize or, you know, you lose in some way, are also very addictive. And just the repetitive element of it, I think it sort of just taps into this just sort of distraction that we need when we're second screening, when we're watching TV, we want to do something with our hands, and perhaps social media at the moment isn't the happiest place to go to. And these games kind of fill that void.
Wow. We're speaking with Katie Dayton, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called Studios Battle for Players of Hyper-Casual Video Games, the Latest Mobile Distraction. Are these games free? What's the business model? Lots of ads. What can we expect here?
Loads of ads. Absolutely loads of ads. Yeah, the vast majority of them are free to play. You will get an ad, I would say, approximately every time you complete a level, and it only takes probably up to 30 seconds to complete a level, and then you're watching, you know, up to, you know, a minute of ads after that. So your ad load is actually more than your gameplay in most cases. And a lot of the ads that you get on these games are ads for other games. So it's a lot of cross promotion. It's a lot of studios copying a game that's very popular from another studio and then advertising that on a game that somebody's already playing.
Wow. All right. So you referenced a handful of games having to do with the refrigerator and filling it in some way. You referenced painting nails. What other types of games are there?
These are the ones that I've been playing. There are, it's like anything you can think of, like slicing games where you literally just chop like what looks like tubes of putty. That racing games are quite popular in terms of, you know, you'll have like a very, very basic avatar that's racing around some kind of environment, like even if it's just a road or something like that. And each, you know, these games get made so quickly. They can be made in, you know, within days, essentially.
Wow.
Very on the cheap. And these studios create them and just see what resonates. And every, you know, year or even less than that, maybe even every 6 months, there's a new trend on the scene. So last year, it was this high heels runner runway kind of game. And then now at the moment, it's more the kind of puzzle, which is something like Fill the Fridge, which requires you to, you know, try and fill as much of a fridge up that you can using kind of spatial awareness in the most basic sense.
That's Katie Dayton, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, July 4th spending on the decline. Dell's Black Friday in July sale is here. Power productivity with a tech refresh, now with up to 45% off top-rated laptops like the XPS, along with our special deals on business desktops with Intel Core processors. Get big savings on the latest servers, storage, monitors, and more with free shipping and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Upgrade today by calling 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for spending part of your first weekend of July with us. With 84% of Americans planning to celebrate the 4th of July this year and collective food spending for the holiday to reach $7.7 billion, the personal finance website WalletHub has released its report on 2022's best and worst places for 4th of July celebrations, as well as interesting stats about the holiday. More from Jill Gonzalez, analyst at WalletHub. Jill, what are we learning?
There's a couple of different reasons why people are saying that. One is inflation. About 60% of Americans say that inflation is in some way affecting their 4th of July plans, whether that's simply, you know, going out and shopping or traveling or not doing those things. So that's kind of one of the reasons. The other is that financial independence, you know, it is Independence Day right now, is shaky. Only about 56% of Americans feel financially independent this year.
Wow. And that's, I guess that somewhat might reflect summer overall, right? We found that spending is down.
Yeah, summer spending is down overall this year. More than half of Americans say that they're going to spend less money this summer versus last year. And they're doing something else instead. They're saving. About 65% of Americans believe that saving money is actually more patriotic than spending it this year.
Wow. Speaking of patriotic, how many of us make an effort to find goods made in the old USA?
A lot of people, 65% of Americans say they do make an effort to buy things made in the USA, and we've seen that number actually increase year over year.
You guys looked also at some of the other kind of, I don't know, spending of July facts. Give us some of those other details.
Yeah, when we're asking people, you know, what's your biggest obstacle in achieving the American dream? Most people say cost of living, 62%. So that kind of goes with inflation again. Some people, about 20%, say that it's just not enough income that they're making. 15% of people say it's debt. Less people say it's education and job opportunities.
We're speaking with Jill Gonzalez, analyst at WalletHub. They've got a survey out that finds 2/3 of Americans plan to spend less money this year with regards to July 4th. On a more fun note, I guess, some of the best cities to celebrate the 4th of July. Give us some of those.
Yeah, absolutely. So we looked at a bunch of different metrics here. We tried to be as comprehensive as possible. So some of the places, the best places to celebrate 4th of July include San Francisco, New York, L.A., you know, a lot of the bigger cities, Philadelphia and Indianapolis as well.
Very good. Give us some of the other takeaways. Anything else that stood out?
Well, this year, again, when we're looking more into spending and what it looks like for the future, essentially saving is what a lot of people think is the most patriotic. That was followed by donating to charities, 20%, and paying taxes, 20%. So saving is better than both of those things.
Thanks, Jill. Jill Gonzalez, analyst at WalletHub. We'll finish with this. Millions of drivers use GPS navigation with voice commands, and this summer will be no exception. Car travel expected to set a record this July 4th weekend, despite high gas prices, according to AAA. All this driving means spending more time with strange sidekicks that can be, like passengers, sometimes pleasant company, sometimes annoying and bossy. The Wall Street Journal says Waze, the popular crowdsourced GPS app that advises motorists about traffic and routes, offers 140 vocal options in 56 languages and has featured actors' voices. A pastor in Los Angeles uses Mr. T.
In a quarter of a mile. Make a left, sucker. Make a left, sucker.
Bob Lewes, the president and chief executive of the Massachusetts Restaurant Association, uses a South African accent on his driving app. He says it's better than having to deal with Boston accents. New York Mets manager Buck Showalter says he changed the voice of his Waze app from an Englishman to that of Cookie Monster, who had a lot of supporters, but no more Cookie Monster. The Waze partnership has ended with Sesame Street. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.